Boston here with CU Broadcast. Welcome back to our continued coverage of Constellation's Launch Conference here in beautiful Durham, North Carolina. And we're actually on the campus of Duke University. And gosh, look who I ran into, of all people, Ron Shevlin. Ron, how are you?
Doing good. I wasn't just happened to be here, you know, Mike. There's a conference going on.
Oh, there is. Oh.
Yeah, no, I'm looking to go back to school, and I figured, nah.
I thought you were one of the esteemed professors here on campus.
Yeah, not quite. Although I do know a professor. I should have looked him up. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You know, so... you're more CU oriented, but Lawrence Baxter, who used to run the digital group, the online banking group for Wachovia back in the day, left Wachovia, and he's a law professor here at Duke.
Oh, wow.
I should have looked that up.
Yeah. All right. He might be in his office right now as we're speaking.
I doubt it.
Yeah, he's probably on vacation. All righty, sir. Hey, you gave a great keynote there, as usual, and it was talking about forces shaping banking today, and there were three of them that you pointed out, but I don't have time to cover all of them. But anyway, I loved how you started out with the Wizard of Oz introduction. I loved how you kind of set the table with that. Can you kind of give us a quick little summary on why you did that and how you did it? So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, so I started kind of half jokingly. No, it was a total joke that I was had a new project and I was going to make a remake of the movie The Wizard of Oz, but I was going to call it the FinTech Wizard of Oz, and I wanted the group's help in some of my casting efforts. And I said, you know, for Dorothy, I wanted a fintech founder. Didn't have to be a female, just had to be somebody who'd been hit upside the head and thought that if they could just cross this poppy field, they'd find a wizard who would lead them to happiness. The Tin Man was going to be played by a credit union CEO because, hey, who's got more heart than a credit union CEO?
Exactly.
And whose back office technology is so rusty that they need the help of a fintech. So I went through a couple of the... you know, different parts and stuff, and you know, try to make people laugh on it. But look, I had a serious message too.
Right, I like
the message was that the Wizard of Oz is really an allegory for what's happening in banking today.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what you read about Wizard of Oz and like the political things that might have been going on, look, the Wizard of Oz is a story of collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Four entities who came together to help each other achieve their unique goals and objectives that A, they could not have achieved on their own, and B, each of them played a very specific role in helping each other achieve those objectives. And that's kind of what's happening in banking today. Credit unions can't do it alone. They need the help of fintechs, they need the help of their technology vendors, they need the help of the regulators.
Right.
And so everyone's kind of coming together to help each other achieve those goals and objectives. And you know me, I got to work some kind of humor into the presentation, so I thought that was a good way to...
Well, you sucked us right in on that one, for sure. And speaking of collaboration, you talked about collaboration later in your presentation about the collaborative future of banking. So, and you said everything comes down to collaboration, so can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, listen, there's a lot of priorities that every credit union has. In terms of products, capabilities, technologies, all these things. You know, you go to financialbrand.com, no offense, and I hope this doesn't come off negative, but if it does, I'll hear it from Maruse and Pilcher. But, you know, there's always articles about how you have to be great at analytics, and you have to be great at digital, and you have to be great at this, and you have to be great at that, and now you have to be AI first as well as digital first and analytics first and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't disagree or dispute any of that.
Right.
But I think the reality from a credit union's perspective is that you can build capabilities to do that internally if you've got 3 to 5 years or more to do it. I don't think any credit union has that luxury right now in this market, in this industry. And so to build any capability, to deliver anything, requires some form of either partnership or at least reliance on some third party to help you do that. And so regardless of what the area of focus may be, what it comes down to is you've got to have a capability and competency around collaboration and partnerships.
Right.
That was kind of the core of my message.
Well, and nobody knows that better than credit unions, because you hear time and time again, collaboration is the credit union superpower because they're so big on sharing. So that really, I think that really hit well with the audience in there, since it's a credit union focused audience. So I think you were spot on there, sir, for sure. But the other thing that really hit me was again at the beginning when you were talking about the millennials, or gosh, I mean, I might be demographic agnostic now, the having accounts everywhere and trying to get something consolidated to where it's in one one area or one silo is really a difficult task. So can you talk about that? Because I mean, you know, they have, you know, they have a Robinhood account for investing, they have Rocket Mortgage for their house, and they have Mint for, you know, budgeting and things like that. So it's just all, it's all so disparate right now. So to have something consolidated is a pretty tall order right now.
Yeah, I would venture to guess, Mike, that if we had polled the group beforehand and asked them, how many financial relationships does your average member have? I would guess they probably would have said 6 to 8. Maybe some of them would have said 10 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
And they're off by an order of magnitude of 4 to 6 in terms of that.
Yeah.
You know, 35% of all Americans have more than one checking account now. 45%, almost half of all millennials, have more than one checking account. We don't just open savings accounts anymore. Mm-hmm. We use savings tools mm-hmm. to help automate mm-hmm. that. We always have had multiple credit cards. That hasn't changed. But if you look at the payments world, it has exploded. Yes, we use our debit cards and our credit cards, but we use P2P payment tools now. Mm-hmm. We're using Venmo mm-hmm. and Zelle and PayPal mm-hmm. and everything else that's out there. And then that doesn't even count all the merchant mobile apps that are out there.
Oh yeah.
You know, Starbucks is definitely one of the most popular in terms of money, but it's amazing how much money people have on their Amazon account, Uber accounts, CVS account, mm-hmm. Panera account, you know, the restaurants, everything. I think a lot of credit unions overlook that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's too bad, because that is a direct loss in interchange revenue. Yes, you're getting that interchange for that first load mm-hmm. because that's a Rails transaction. After that, you're missing out on every interchange.
Yeah.
So then you mentioned the loans. But I think a lot of credit unions overlook the fact that many of their members are using tools like Mint, which mm-hmm. is not as popular as it used to be, Credit Karma, hugely popular. Yeah. NerdWallet, very popular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a company called Investor without the vowels, and they have a fantasy finance game that many... So it's not just accounts, it's tools. And from a consumer's perspective, they don't care if it's an account or not.
Right.
To them, it's just something they use,
right.
and it's a relationship.
Right.
And I think a lot of consumers will tell you that those relationships or tools provide more value to
mm-hmm.
them
mm-hmm.
than some of the accounts do.
Right, right.
And so that's what I really wanted to wake these folks up to.
Yeah, and so what can a credit union do in this case to kind of counter that? Or is there anything they can do?
No, I absolutely think there's plenty of things they can do. And it's really rethinking the product strategy. Mike, I would argue that one of the worst things that's happened over the past 15 to 20 years in the industry is that the industry has the credit union folks, have become captive to this view that products are commodities, and it's all about differentiating on customer or member experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No. It goes in waves. There's product innovation and then experience innovation. And now we're in a period of product innovation. And it is not necessarily new product development. It's not dreaming up the next checking account.
Yeah.
It's reconfiguring, rejiggering, recalibrating, I don't know the right word, the existing product to incorporate more functionality that's specific to the needs of a particular customer or a particular customer member segment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I think what credit unions need to do is embrace this concept, what I like to call embedded fintech. So embedded finance has become a very popular term. It means embedding financial services into non-financial services firms, product offerings and apps and things like that.
Right.
Embedded fintech is the exact opposite, is embedding fintech tools into the financial institutions' platforms.
Okay.
So I think the credit unions need to look at their member base and say, what are the other things that they buy, that they need?
Mm-hmm.
And incorporating things like, it could be simple as cell phone damage protection, identity theft protection, bill analysis mm-hmm. and negotiation, wealth management services. you know, there's a lot of talk past few years about the amount of money that millennials and Gen Zers are going to inherit from their baby boomer and senior family members. Mm-hmm. And yes, a lot of folks salivate, oh, billions of dollars we're going to help manage. That money has to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Wealth transfer services, huge opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no shortage of particular product areas that can be incorporated into their digital platforms, into their mobile apps, into their websites, more importantly, into their processes.
Yeah.
And so I think it really requires credit unions to kind of rethink the product offering and really hone in on who do they serve. Because if you're serving the general consumer, you'll never kind of figure out what it is they want and need, and somebody's going to beat you to the punch on that one.
Yeah, and going back to embedded fintech and embedded embedded finance. I apologize. You gave Lyft. You used Lyft as an example of what's in their app for the drivers. Can you share that a little? Because I don't think a lot of folks know what goes on in that app, especially from the driver's perspective.
Yeah. So you know, what's funny first is that a lot of folks in the industry, both bankers and credit union folks, see embedded finance as a threat. They're not stealing all your general customer base. Mm-hmm. They're cherry picking. Lyft is not looking to provide financial services to the general consumer. It's not for the riders, not for you and me, unless you're a driver.
Not yet.
Not yet, me neither. But, as I'll say, maybe we should be.
I know, after what you're going
to
say.
Because they're providing services to their drivers for a number of reasons. Number one, those drivers tend to be underbanked, even though I hate that term, like with a passion.
Yeah.
And that's where they are, and they know those drivers. And so even though all of this is embedded in the app, the driver app, not the user app,
right.
It's interesting that I happen to have a copy of a direct mail offer that Lyft sends to its drivers. And on the direct mail offer, first of all, it highlights the debit card rewards. I think it was 4% back on something or dining, 3% back on something else, 1% back. Well, Mike, you can't be getting that good a deal on your own debit card.
I know
sure as hell I'm not getting that.
Yeah, you're right.
So that's why I thought maybe we should be Lyft drivers just to get the debit card.
Exactly.
But they offer the Lyft driver immediate payment if they get the debit card.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge benefit instead of waiting 2 to 3 days or whatever it might be. It's integrated into the app. You do everything through the app.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do get the direct mail offer, there's a QR code. You scan the QR code, boom, the application's done, because they know everything all about you already.
Right.
Man, that is a great experience.
I know.
And you get a great product. But here's the thing. This is not just a threat, because there's a bank behind that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There has to be a bank behind it, and it can be a credit union.
Yeah, good point.
And so this is an opportunity. So if I was talking with somebody else about this embedded finance opportunity, they said, you know, does it help the sponsor, you know, the fintech or the brand, reach the credit union's members? I said, that's not what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
They already have customers.
Mm-hmm.
They're
mm-hmm.
looking
mm-hmm.
to create more loyalty among their own customers by offering financial products. So it's really a distribution channel play. It's not a threat, it's an opportunity.
Yeah,
you've got
it,
but you have to be in that game to do it, and you have to have a set of technology capabilities to support these non-financial brands or fintechs, whoever they might be, with your technology.